Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Profundity Podcast, a podcast hosted by me, Andrew Ripple, a human who says words, words, words. Look, y'all, I'm not going to steal Griffin McElroy's thunder full on and copy his bit about about becoming the one true final form, the being of pure energy named Bliss Delight, which if you do not understand this, you do not listen to the podcast, my brother and me, and for that, I just don't know how you live your life, man. I don't know how you live your life. Normally, I'm not totally into the you must listen to XYZ, but like with Veronica Mars and television, My Brother, Me is the universal constant truth in the world of podcasting. But if you have been listening to My Brother, and Me, then you know that it is a bit that has been happening for a little while that Griffin McElroy has transcended into the being of pure energy and ultimate final form of Bliss Delight. And the reasoning behind that, of course, is him seeing Carly Rae Jepsen and also getting a little videograph about Carly Rae Jepsen from Lin-Manuel Miranda. And I don't know what videograph meant. Anyway, that's a whole story. But more so, Griffin saw Carly Rae Jepsen and has ascended into the being of pure light known as Bliss Delight. Now, when I said that I'm not going to steal his bit, what that means is that, Griffin, I get it. I get exactly what you mean. Like, I got it intellectually before when you talked about it, because if anyone's listened to this podcast, no, hashtag Carly Rae fan forever. I've done multiple episodes dedicated to my girl Carly. But I get what you feel about the just everything is transcended. Everything is great. Everything is like vibrating on a different plane. The molecules just sort of bend in ways that they would not have otherwise. And the reason, of course, why I say that is because just what I got to do this weekend, I got to see Carly Rae Jepsen, but I did not see her perform music. I was not able to actually go see her show here in San Francisco because I was busy doing Antony and Cleopatra. Yay! Theater things are fun. And it was a fun show. So, like, if I'm going to miss the girl, the creator of the universe, the queen of all creation, Carly Rae Jepsen, then, well, I guess it is a worthy thing to miss out on it for. However, that afternoon, there was something a little bit special that occurred. There's a podcast called Song Exploder, another one that I think is one of my go-to recommendations because I can't imagine anyone not liking it. It sort of is such a perfect idea that everyone gets it immediately upon me describing it, why I like it and why they would like it. But the podcast is called Song Exploder, and the premise is Hrishikesh Hirway, who is the host, interviews musicians about a song of theirs and interviews them about the songwriting process, the production process, sort of every level of the song. And along the way, he has the artist provide him with early demos, with the individual stems for the drum recording, or an early drum recording, and then the bass recording, and stuff like that. And then they explode the song. They break it apart, and you get to actually listen to the individual things that are being talked about, isolated and separate. And it really is, for anyone that is a musician or a producer, it is one of the most invaluable resources that you could possibly ever listen to. You're hearing to all these different artists from all these different genres breaking down how exactly they made XYZ song. And also, if you're just a music fan, I think it's you'd be curious. And it's interesting to see the hidden work that goes behind making such a fantastic final product. Now, why am I talking about the podcast Song Exploder? Because Carly Rae Jepsen did a Song Exploder, and the recording was, it was a live recording, and it was free, and it was in San Francisco, and I went to go see it. And I'm like, guys, I was about 40 feet away from Carly Rae Jepsen sitting there at this free show, like five rows back, sitting on folding chairs in the Swedish American Hall in San Francisco, and she was just there with her guitarist, Tavish, talking about her song, talking about the song When I Needed You. And so look, Griffin, you've got me beat on having seen her perform. I've yet to actually see Carly Rae Jepsen perform her masterpieces, perform the songs that make up the emotional soul of the E.Mo.Shinnel soul of our tepid, broken universe, and give life meaning in this wasteland that we call existence. But I did get to see her talk for 45 minutes about a song of hers, and be adorable, and be wonderful, and be brilliant, and, like, break down all the different things. So I'm not gonna, like, in deference to the actual show itself, the show will eventually come out at some point, and you can listen to the things she say, and listen to the stuff she has, so I'm certainly not going to spill all the beans and do podcast spoilers. And also, there's an element of, so the way the podcast itself actually works is it's about a 12-minute long show, very tightly edited, and you don't actually hear Hrishikesh ask any of his questions. Those were all edited out. For the live show especially, it was about 45 minutes, and so it was much more of a free-flowing conversation. I mean, still a very directed interview, but much more of a conversation. We got to listen to the song all the way through at the beginning and all the way through at the end, listen to a lot of demos. I got to listen to demos of When I Needed You. I got to listen to multiple demos, and it sounded so good. And yes, and I got to hear, like, hidden things that are hidden in the recording that now I can't unhear, and it's just changed the way I think about the song, and the song has become one of my favorites, and it was already a great song. It was a perfect little, like, one of there's sort of the meme of meme in terms of, like, idea that gets repeated, not in terms of, like, internet meme, but the meme of Carly Rae Jepsen as channeling Cyndi Lauper a lot on Emotion, and that is true to an extent, but nowhere is it more true than When I Needed You, which does sound like a modernized Cyndi Lauper song. It's great, it's flowy, it's big and bombastic, and kind of weird and kind of off there, but, like, it was a great song that I loved already, and now I love it even more because I know so much about it, and also, I was, like, 40 feet away from Carly Rae Jepsen. This is the interesting thing. I have not 100% processed this, though. It is not the kind of thing that it's existing in the background, and whenever I think about it, it starts to, like, bubble up again, but it takes a little while for it to bubble up into, like, the holy shit, wait, guys, there was me, and there was Carly. So I didn't get to talk to her, or I didn't get to, like, take a picture with her, or do anything like that, because she had to rush and do stuff like that. And that's totally fine. That is not me knocking anything. That is me just stating the facts of the circumstance. And I think maybe if I had gotten to actually meet the Queen of All Creation, then it would be different, and I'd be dead forever. But I also think, you know, there is that element of just, like, things happen in your life, and, you know, I don't entirely know where I'm going with this, but I don't know, fandom is an interesting thing, and I think I have started to make a change in the, hello bus, make a change in the way that I view my fandom and the way that I view creators of content, and the big sort of change I think that happened with it was at a Harry Potter convention that I went to a few years ago where I was actually performing as part of a contest, I was a huge, and continue to be, big, big, big fan of the web series The Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which is a modernized adaptation of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, done through vlogs, and is still, I think, the best, the three best of this. It started off this whole wave of, like, literary vlog-style adaptations, I'm saying all that in air quotes, but where you take an old classic story that is in public domain, I think that's the reason why it sort of became a movement, it's that it's stories that are in public domain, so they're free to adapt, and then make them in a sort of pseudo epistolary style, where it is being told as the vlogs of the characters. I've seen a bunch of them, a little bit. There are only three of them that I genuinely, genuinely adore and love, and, like, in terms of literary vlog style series, rise up, and I've watched all of them, and I will rewatch them, and I adore them. One of them is Lizzie Bennet Diaries. Lizzie Bennet Diaries just did it first, and did it so well. It used its high production value in comparison to the other, some of the other series, in a great way. It felt... And it also just fit the material so well. And it did really cool things with the idea of reliable and unreliable narrators, and it built really slowly and took its time and sort of had respect for the material and respect for its audience and respect for the world that it had created, and I think it is just a great, great thing. Nothing Much to Do is a Australian... I think there's Australians and New Zealanders that work on it, but I think it's a mostly New Zealander show. But it is an adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing, which, unsurprisingly, if you know me as a human, I care a lot about and enjoy the play Much Ado About Nothing. I directed it last year for the Shakespeare Company that I'm a part of, and I think it's just a fantastic, phenomenal play. And over the summer, it was over the summer while I was editing my script and doing research into the play was when I got Nothing Much to Do brought to my attention. So it's a modern day adaptation of Much to Do About Nothing. I had that brought to my attention and I started watching it a lot. And it, I sort of said before that there's a handful of things that super, super strongly influenced my Much to Do About Nothing. I was definitely very influenced by Marx Brothers, and especially both the Marx Brothers movies, but especially a production of The Coconuts, which was a music, Marx Brothers, old Marx Brothers musical that was sort of redone and revamped for the stage at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So I was super, super influenced, and I saw that, super influenced by that in my production. There was that. There was sort of tonally and stylistically definitely influenced by like The Great Gatsby and the Baz Luhrmann Great Gatsby, that sort of mix of spectacle and stuff like that. But Nothing Much to Do was one of my primary ones for like how I viewed the characters of Benedict and Beatrice and Margaret and Hero and Don Pedro and stuff like that. Now, a lot of those obviously were different because it didn't like 101-to-1 translate. Jake and Harriet's from Benedict and Beatrice from Nothing Much to Do was not the same as my Benedict and Beatrice in my production, because they're being played by actors and actors do their own thing, and not a lot of actors had seen Nothing Much to Do, so that was good. It was a nice necessary translation that happened, but I don't know, it's sort of because it was as I was editing the script that I had in my head the ways that they decided to interpret those characters, and I had that in my head, and that greatly influenced what lines that I keep, what lines that I cut. How do I think about the arcs of these characters through the way that they are being performed by these people? I think especially Benedict in particular was very, very, my conception of Benedict as a character was very, very strongly influenced by Jake McGregor on Nothing Much to Do. The third literary, so that's one that I love. I think it's perfect. And it's the only one that very, very truly feels like it's an actual vlog. Like as much as I love Lizzie Bennet, it feels like a grad student make a vlog for a project, which is the point. That's how it is. Nothing Much to Do is the only vlog style show I've ever seen that feels like it's a vlog being made by the actual characters. Like they are actual teenagers making a YouTube channel. It looks the same way me and my friends' YouTube channels look. The channels interact with each other in the same way that me and my friends' YouTube channels would interact. It's very, very authentic. The other one that I love is, a Telltale vlog, which is done by a group called Shipwrecked Comedy, and was done by Sean and Sinead Persaud, brother and sister in Los Angeles, and Yulin Kwong, who are the coolest humans. They are the coolest humans. And hey, they, I don't know at the point when this comes up if their Kickstarter is still happening. If it is, I'll put it in the show notes. I donated to it on the first day because I love Shipwrecked. The Shipwrecked bros are the best humans. And they, a Telltale vlog is also great because it 100% completely eschews any pretense of trying to be like realistic and authentic, which I think it's that I desire to be like an authentic, in air quotes, vlog style. It works really well if you can do it, like Nothing Much to Do did, but if you can't live up to it, then it makes it seem, if you're trying to gain credence by saying, hey, look how authentic, it's like with a found footage movie. If you're a found footage movie that is attempting to gain something by the fact that, hey, why people are going to want to watch this, or what's special about me is how authentic and how much it feels like reality, because I'm doing found footage, then you better nail the reality just right, because we're going to hold you to, because we're expecting it to be real, we're going to hold you to a higher bar than we would something that just eschews that and says, no, the point is not for it to feel real or anything like that. So it'd be the difference between if The Office consistently kept reminding you that like it's an actual documentary that's supposed to be recorded, then we would be saying, wait, that doesn't make sense. Whereas instead it just becomes sort of another fictional framing device that allows us to see cool things. And we can forgive it because it's not being championed as like part of the necessary style. It's part of the style rather than like a thing that we have to keep in our heads. I don't know if that was rambly. A Telltale vlog completely eschews any idea of trying to be realistic or stuff like that. It's more like a documentary than a vlog, TBQH, but it works perfectly because it's just so funny, and it gives them the freedom to kind of do whatever they want. And also, it's about Edgar Allan Poe and a ghost and named Lenore, and plays so fast and loose with timelines and what's going on, and it's hilarious and funny, and I adore it to death. So, Lizzie Bennet Diaries, Nothing Much to Do, Telltale Vlog. Those are the three literary websites I like. Anyway, going back to the Lizzie Bennet Diaries was at a Harry Potter convention that I went to. The whole cast was there, and I was a huge fan, and I love them, I love them, I love them. And they were like, I was, yeah, sort of obsessive fan and was freaking out about the chance to potentially get to meet them. And I did. I waited in line, got to meet them, and it was great. Then I also saw them when I was on the train on the way back to my hotel room, and also kind of freaked out and went up and said hi, but then went back to my thing. And that was sort of a moment, I think, that shifted my conception of fandom. And this is not at all to say anything about those people. Those people are the best. They, I really hope that the fact that my computer just went to sleep does not mean that the recording stopped. No, thank you. Phew. This was sort of, it was just a reframing of my own way of thinking about it. Cause I didn't really get to, it was the first chance to sort of get to meet, especially being on the train, getting to meet idols of mine in a semi-more casual, the potential to meet them in a semi-more casual circumstance, unlike, you know, waiting in line for a signing or stuff like that. Where I was going with this was that I sort of got this idea in my head of, like, you know, I don't particularly want to try and become friends with, and I don't really care as much about meeting people that are, at least, I don't know, I'm interested in potentially doing interesting creative stuff with my life, and I don't really want to be, okay, put it this way, if I saw the cast of the Lizzie Bennet Diaries now, or saw there was a signing or something like that, I would not wait in line for an hour to go meet them anymore. Because there's something in that interaction that is not a kind of interaction that I necessarily want. I would love to potentially be friends with people, and that will remove those specific examples of people like that, that are sort of idols of mine that could be theoretically within reach. I would love to become friends with them, but I don't really want this. I don't want to meet, this sounds more conceited than I think it meant to be, but I don't necessarily want to meet people that would have no reason or desire to want to meet me either. I want it to be a little more of an equal footing thing. And I think a huge part of that comes from the fact that around the same time also was the beginning of awesome internet friendships with people like Hannah Mraz, with my friend Rachel, with Kirsten Hippie, with other people that were at that conference, that those kinds of relationships and friendships are what I would want to have out of all these things. And I don't really want to be I've never really been much of a participator in direct creator fan communication. I am much more of I will consume whatever the creator throws at me, and I will create my own things, but I don't respond to the creators directly. Just in general, I will obsessively listen to podcasts of people, but I would not reach out and comment. That's the thing, it always weirds me out of, why would you comment on the YouTube video of a person you're not friends with? Makes no sense to me. I literally cannot understand why you would do that. I can sort of intellectually understand that people don't do it, but like, it's never something I would want to do. Why would you, it even feels weird responding to a tweet of a person that I follow, I do it rarely, but every time I do it, I sort of step back and think, this feels weird, and I don't necessarily know if I want to do it again. I don't know. It's that element of what I want. Yeah, I just don't like necessarily being, I think creator fan dynamics, and anyone can have whatever creator fan dynamic they want. That's awesome. That is, you do your own thing. But I kind of like that separation I like that separation, unless you are on an equal playing field with a creator, whether you're a creator yourself that is doing something else, or you're just a friend of theirs or something like that. Unless your relationship is on an equal playing field, I don't necessarily want it. I'm okay with it being a one-way relationship. I wouldn't want a two-way relationship that is unequal in one direction, is, I guess, what I'm saying by that. I would have no problem Jane Smith is the star of a cool YouTube show that I really like, and as a YouTube content creator that I love to watch her videos. And I would have no problem, I guess, necessarily supporting and saying, hey, this is a good YouTube. So that's also what difference is. I have no problem saying and supporting, this is a cool YouTube creator, you should, getting sort of positive feedback in terms of making the creations better and good, but I would not. Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, wait in line for an hour to meet Jane Smith, necessarily. Because I'd be like, I have other things to do. I'd rather hang out with friends and stuff like that. And I know that meeting that person will not drastically change my life in any strong way, direction, one way or another. This, however, is all to say that I think there are a couple of exceptions. I think there are, on the top of my head, two exceptions that I just don't care. I would be willing to take 20. If I meet them for 20 seconds, it's worth whatever wait. It will break my brain. And those two exceptions that I can think of off the top of my head are Taylor Swift and Carly Rae Jepsen. If I got a chance to meet either of those, I don't care. I issue all of that other theory and all of that other treatise that I was talking about. And it's just, yep. We're done. Great day at the ballgame, folks. Because it'd get to meet Carly Rae Jepsen and Taylor Swift, who are just... I don't know. Creator-fan dynamics are very interesting, and I don't know how to think necessarily about them, as you can tell, because I don't have a perfectly, like, cogent, thought process. But here's actually a thing. So going back to I think also part of why I love mediums like YouTube and podcasts and stuff like that is I like that it's sort of playing on a slightly smaller playing field, and that there is elements for a little more of a tight community. Oh, that's actually another interesting community. I am also, I think, a little bit of an odd fan in that I don't participate in fandom communities ever. I will if it is my friends. The only fandom communities I'm a part of are my friends. I do not, I'm not part of a fandom in, so like, okay, we can talk about Carly Rae Jepsen. I, like Carly Rae Jepsen a lot, surprise, surprise, on like Tumblrs and Twitters and stuff like that. I post about Carly Rae Jepsen a lot, and I follow a lot of people that also post about Carly Rae Jepsen a lot. I would not consider myself... I consider myself a Carly Rae Jepsen fan. I don't consider myself part of a Carly Rae Jepsen fandom. I do not interact with other fans of Carly Rae Jepsen that are not friends of mine for some other reason. I do not... It's just that's a whole separate mentality of how to interact with other... Yeah, the idea of interacting with other fans of a thing does not compute and does not click for me. It's not a thing that I like to do. And even, you know, if I go to like comic conventions and stuff like that, I love going to comic conventions. I love being surrounded by other fans and people, but I don't necessarily want to interact with them, if that makes sense. And it's not that, you know, it's ever a bad experience in, you know, I've made friends through conventions, but that was sort of a special circumstance. But like, I've been waiting in line for a panel and then someone will talk to me and it's a lovely, perfectly wonderful conversation. I think a lot of it does have to do with sort of social anxiety that like online I like being able to stay in my lane, and I'm very much a fan of I'm kind of a fan of creating the same fan creator dynamics for my own work, which my own work I'm even counting stuff like the posts I reblog on Tumblr and stuff like that. So it's obviously in a different league, but it's like it's a similar circumstance of I like to do the sort of throw things out into the ether and then just let them exist and let them be taken how they will is also, I think. So I don't know. Who knows whether it's, if we're going to chicken and the egg, creator fan dynamics, whether it's that I like the idea of creating a thing and then just throwing it out there and having it be received however it is and it not necessarily coming back to me. And, you know, the fans get to play in their own little world where they are kings, and the creators get to play in their own little world where they are kings, and that there can be interaction, but the interaction will always happen in that sort of downward slope way. So, like, I might interact with a fan of my thing, but it's because they create a thing that I am a fan of. And so it's a downward slope from me to them, and then a downward slope from them to me. And or maybe they're my friends, in which case, like, there isn't that... there aren't downward slopes in either direction, it's just a straight thing, but that's because we're friends, not because of and even if the friendships were started as a result of creator fan dynamics, it got leveled out and ironed out. I am sitting here with coffee in front of me, but I haven't drank it yet, so that probably explains why the tail end of this is rails. They're being gone off. Creative dynamics, downward slopes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know, man. I don't know, man. I don't know, man. I can feel there's a thread that's dangling, and I've lost it, and I've lost it completely and utterly. I like having signed things, though. It's cool to have signed stuff, because but that's more because I'm a shameless collector of, just shameless collector of assorted objects. This is a fun little quirk about me, is that I hate buying souvenirs. Are not things that I like, but I love keeping and collecting any of the assorted paraphernalia that result from experiences. So I'm not a person that would love to, unless of course they're the exception always being if it's a cool. I like souvenirs and stuff like that if they are cool objects in and of themselves. If it's the kind of thing that I would buy regardless of the emotional connection and nostalgic connection to the place, then awesome. Those are great. But I would not buy something for the purpose of being a souvenir. Personally, I might do it as a gift for a friend or something like that, or a family member, but I would not do that personally. One of my favorite, there's a blog called Minimums that I read that I love, that is they go in and take super high quality photos of people that are sort of interesting and creative people. They go into their apartments or their workplace and take beautiful, gorgeous, large, high quality photos of a handful of those people's favorite objects. I think the theory behind it is if you just were to trim it down to the minimums, then these would be the things that would stand out. Every once in a while, when a new blog post comes up, I start like to think about, like, oh, what would mine be if I were on that blog? And one of the absolute ones that always comes to mind is this coffee mug that I'm holding in my hand right now. It is a very simple coffee mug. It is just red and sort of an off red on the, there's a lot stripe that goes right through the center of the mug. Below the stripe, it is sort of a wineish red, and above the stripe it's sort of a cream color, and it's just a cheapo €4 coffee mug from Monoprix, which is French Target, that I bought the first week that I was in Paris, and used. That was the mug that I used throughout the entire quarter I was there, and it's still one of my favorite possessions just because it's the coffee mug I used in Paris. I love collecting ticket stubs. I love collecting maps of, like, I have a Disneyland Paris map up above my wall. I love collecting cards, so if I like old ID cards and stuff like that, and programs and playbills and things like that. I am a huge lover of the tangible accessories that go along with life, and I don't like taking pictures that often. I don't really take pictures, which is an interesting bit of slight contention between me and some family members of, like, oh, why don't you ever take more pictures of yourself? That's what you kind of want to, like, remember yourself by. And who knows? Maybe I will, it's 100% possible, I acknowledge this, that in 20, 30 years, I will regret the fact that I don't have more pictures of myself as a younger person. But, like, I have a bunch of photo albums that have pictures of myself as a kid, and I have never once at any point in my life opened them up. I just have no desire to look at photographs of stuff like that. But I love having the actual tangible objects. It's why I didn't get rid of my stuffed animals and stuff like that, because, like, for me, that is what reminds me of my childhood, and that's what my childhood is, not a photograph of me doing a thing. So I was going to actually talk about something else entirely. I was going to talk about musical theater bootlegs. That was going to be my big topic. But, you know, it just kept going and talking about the creator-fan dynamics, and now I have to come up with a clever name for the episode. Maybe not trying to steal Griffin McElroy's thunder. Lightning. Lol. Not trying to steal Griffin McElroy's thunder. That's what we'll do. That is going to be the choice of thingamajigger for episode. I don't know. See, that's even the way that I do this podcast, is I like to create it and throw it out into the ether, and then not, even though it's only listened to by my friends, I don't like the podcast to be a thing that is, it's not a thing that I will bring up. Because that's a dynamic that I, when talking about, yeah, whatever. I think you get it. If you don't get it, then you probably also don't care, so whatever. Was there any surprise as to what the song would be this week? Of course not, because, guys, I saw the Queen of All Creation. I got in really close to the mic for this because it's really important, because she's the Queen of All Creation, and my life is... There is a pre and a post. There's a pre and a post now. After February 27th, 2016... There's the before and there's the after, and now we are living firmly in the after. And for that, I will bid y'all adieu and let you listen to a little bit of Carly.